She's going to keep you awake this afternoon. I don't think she wants you to miss a damn word she's going to say. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Lindsay G. from Lawrenceville, Georgia.
My name is Lindsay, and I am a great recovering alcoholic. Hi, everybody. If y'all will bear with me for just a second so I can step out of the way and let God move in a little bit and stop my knees and everything, I am going to say the third step prayer. And it is, God, I offer myself to thee to do with me and to build with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And it's real important for me to remember that I'm not up here, because the time I got up here, I left. So I'd like to stay for a few minutes, whether y'all like it or not. Anyway, in freeing myself, before I forget, I would like to thank you people so much, your committee, and all of you for having our family up here. You'll never know how important it was for us at this time. It is probably one of the greatest privileges we've had. And as a family, these days, our family goes here, there, and everywhere. It seems like with my kids who have grown up, we don't have the opportunity to be together. And we were going to fly, and then we decided to make it a family affair against one of our members' better judgment. But we've had a good time. We're glad he came, and he obviously is having fun. I've only seen him once. But before we begin... I told him I'd embarrass him a little bit. I would, because you're going to meet David and Richard later on, I would like to introduce Mama's baby boy, Eric. Eric, would you stand up? It's called Get Even, you know. And I'd also like to thank Jackie and Pete for flying down to the Southeastern last year. You know, if they hadn't flown into Atlanta and we hadn't picked them up, we probably wouldn't be up here this year. So I'd like to thank them, too, for having us. They're really neat people. Okay, y'all, and I'm trying to loosen up. It'll take a secchi. The other thing is, I noticed last night, y'all don't talk with this kind of voice that I have here, this language. You have this different language. And there must be some Irish Catholics out there, because y'all can say the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer fast as we do it awake, I know, at church, you know? Okay. We're supposed to, it's funny, and I have to tell y'all, I told Richard, I've been worried about this all day. I'm in a good place, and when I'm in a good place, I don't mean to be flipped, but I feel good. I've had a bad year, and I've come out of it, and I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I just kind of get up here and try to show you that it's good, y'all, I don't mean that it wasn't bad, because it was as bad as it gets. But when it's good, it's as good as it gets, and I'm truly grateful today. I'm also very grateful to the people in the meeting last night that we were with, because a lot of you took me back to a place I needed to go. And I'm very grateful for your honest sharing. And for those of you in pain, I'm here to tell you on the other side, it does pass if you keep coming back. And if you're in a good place, I know that we better enjoy it while we can, because we could go elsewhere. We know that too. But we're supposed to tell a little bit of what we were like, what happened, and what we're like today. And for me, I kind of go back just to qualify where I came from and hope I don't stay there long, because I really like to get into where we are now. And that is that I grew up in an Irish Catholic, obviously, family. That's how I knew you did it fast. But I grew up on the side that was all excommunicated, because they all divorced and, you know, moved on to other things. And they moved on to alcoholism, actually. But anyway, there was, every female in my family was an alcoholic, and the males were too. And so all of our holidays and all of our time was spent drinking. I thought it was very normal behavior. You know, they would have cocktail hour and the drinking at night. And I took my first drink at home because my parents were tired of me watching them drink. And I took it at 14 years old. And I took a swallow, and it burst inside, and it felt good, and I loved it. And I didn't care if they drank, you know, so I had a second. And I liked that, and I liked what it did for me, and I could laugh and carry on and play like everybody else. I'm one of the people that believes that I was born with this disease. I think inside, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, if whatever you got to think to accept, it's okay by me. And for me to come to accept it, I had to believe I was born with it. And I believe there's something chemically wrong in me that I cannot drink alcohol. So from my first drink, I drank alcoholically. I had blackouts as a teenager. Every time I drank, I got drunk, except in the last 2 years, and that was when I was trying to control it and to get Richard off my back, you know. But up until that point, I got drunk every time I drank. And I had a blackout just about every time, and my blackouts got longer and longer towards the end. As a teenager, I ran with the drinking crowd because I had all of those sick feelings we had. I not only believe I was born with it, I grew up in it, and then I had all those feelings, those negative behaviors, those character defects that helped me to drink that much harder. I had a lot of self-pity, and I knew how to use that to my own advantage, and I had a lot of anger and a lot of resentments. And what I never realized until I got into my inventory was that that was nothing but fear. You know, everything I did, I was operating on fear. I could never have stood up here. Not even when I first came here could I have stood up here. You won't believe that, I'm sure, after you see me. I mean, but anyway, as a teenager, I can remember, I was thinking about this on the way up here. We had cheerleading tryouts, and I was pretty good until we got to tryouts. And I got out there, and they had four or five girls, however they do it, and I froze. And I freaked out because I was so worried about what others thought of me. I just froze and couldn't do it, and I cried and left. And I was to do that a lot of times. I had opportunities to get up and in different things, PTA, you know, Little League and all that, and stand up in front of people. I couldn't talk because I was so consumed with what others thought of me that I couldn't carry on. But if I drank, then I could stand up here and you probably could never get me down, you know. But drinking did for me everything that I wanted it to at that time. It blocked out all the terrible things in my life. I ran with the crowd in high school, and I barely got out of high school because of my drinking and skipping school and the people I ran with. Don't tell my kids this, you know. But anyway, I now that most of them are out, it's okay. But I went on, and I met this crowd of people when I got out and of high school, and there was this particular guy in this crowd that I kind of latched onto and wanted. You know, I saw him. The first time I saw him, I thought, I'm going to have that, and I want it. And I set out to get it, and I got it. And later on, I thought, why did I get this, you know? But Richard will tell why we got married later. I don't. But anyway, we... actually, he'll tell you we were in heat. That's what he'll say. Anyway, we got married, and as true Catholics do, in 4 years we had three boys, you know, that was wonderful. And we, I decided at that point, stop this foolishness, you know, and I didn't drink during those 3 years. Today we talk about the fetal alcoholism syndrome. I didn't drink during that time. I did have one child that had a slight problem at birth that they linked to that, and I'm not sure, but I didn't drink. I was too busy being a mother and whatever else I was trying to be. Because you see, I was looking for the White House, the white picket fence, and the Rose Garden. And I really thought if we got married and had a house full of kids, my life was going to be okay. And I was going to have that White House and white picket fence and Rose Garden. I was going to be Donna Reed, and everything was going to be okay. We both, it ended abruptly. I don't like to cook. I don't like to clean house. I didn't like to do any of that stuff. You know, I like to go to the playground with my kids, and that was the extent of my motherhood at that point. I started drinking again after my last child was born. I went back to work, and I got in with the crowd that drank at lunch. I immediately knew how to find them. I got in the crowd that went to drink after work. I'd go to have one or two drinks, and the next thing you'd know, it'd be 2 or 3 in the morning, and I didn't want to be there, and I didn't know how I got there, and I was sorry I was there. There'd be times I'd call home. I'd tell Richard I'd be home a little while. We'd have a fight. I'd hang up the phone, and I'd think, oh, what the hell? I'm going to be in trouble. Anyway, I'll just stay, and I did that. I'm not proud of it, and I don't like that I did those things, and sometimes I forget I did those things. It's easy for me to stand up here today thinking I'm okay, and I'm a good person, but I do have to remember that the only reason I'm okay today is because of you people in this room and others like you. Anyway, we went on, and my drinking, I would start out as a happy drunk, life of the party. Somewhere in there, somebody would make me mad. I'd get mad, get mean, and then I'd cry, and then I'd pass out. It was about at mean that I'd start blacking out. Richard would tell me what happened in mean. I wouldn't believe him. I have no idea. Sometimes I think some of it was made up. I don't know. I couldn't have been that bad, you know, but I was, and I was guilty, and I could pick up guilt, and I operated on guilt. And as soon as I got out of trouble, I'd swear to him I'd never do it again. We won't drink. I promise I'll behave. And the next thing you know, for no apparent reason, I was either rewarding myself or whatever, I was back off to the races. And the end result was always the same. We always had a fight. I always hated myself, and I started becoming suicidal in my thoughts. It always was your fault or Richard's fault or my mother's fault or the dog's fault. It was never my fault, you see, because if all those people hadn't been so hateful to me, I wouldn't have to do this. If I didn't have three small children, I wouldn't be this way. You know, I wouldn't have to drink. At this point, a neat doctor pointed out something to me. I had a nervous condition. And he gave me these funny little yellow pills. And the funny thing about those pills was, Richard never knew I took them. But I'd take them, and I'd wait 30 minutes, and I'd take another, and I'd take it. And you know, until I could get there, and later on in my life, I never could get there anymore. You know, I was looking for the ultimate. I only mention them because they were a part of my drinking, because my problem is alcohol. And when I put down the alcohol, I put down all the other things too. But it's important for me to know that I can't take those either. Just make me a little crazy all over again. I passed on, and the drinking stopped being fun. I am a bar drinker. I drink away from home. I think a lot of that's because my mother drank at home. And she hid the bottles all over the house. And I figured as long as I drink after 11 o'clock and don't drink at home, I'm not an alcoholic. Now, my mother came into AA right about when we got married. It messed up my whole life. Shortly thereafter, my grandmother came into AA. And shortly after that, my aunt came into AA. Now, these people who used to sit around drinking and fighting and partying were all spiritual giants. And there I was. I thought they had some kind of religion, and I wanted no part of you. We stayed away from, my mother and I fought a lot, and we didn't get along, and she pointed out my drinking, and I didn't like that at all. She moved to Dallas, Texas, and she was a beautiful, beautiful lady, and I'm only sorry I didn't know her in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I really missed something, but evidently some of it rubbed off, because it's through her graces and prayers, I think, that I'm here today. Anyway, she went into AA, and I set out to get ready to come into AA. And so I set about, and the last, what I need to talk about really, everything was hell. Y'all know where I've been. You've been there. It's no needing to go in. It's the same as everybody else's. I drank away from home. Later, I drank at home. Later, I drank everywhere. And if I wasn't drinking, I was smoking a little pot, you know. Somebody told me I had to learn how to drink scotch, and I persevered till I learned. And then somebody told me I had to learn how to smoke pot, and I persevered till I learned how to do that. And then somebody told me I had to learn how to stay sober, and thank God I'm still persevering to learn that, you know. Anyway, the last 2 years of my drinking were really rough, and it was like everybody else's end. It took what it took to get me here. It was bad places, wake up, not know where I was. You know, come home, and we had awful, awful fights. We separated, and we were telling somebody today at lunch, we couldn't live with each other, and we couldn't live apart, and it's the truth. And I'm so grateful today that God saw fit to help keep Richard hanging in there, because I'm sure that I'd be one of those names you'd read about in the paper dead somewhere if he hadn't stayed with me. And anyway, I went in and out of sobriety in those last 2 years. My mother had terminal cancer by this time, and I'd go to Texas and visit her and come back. And my stepfather had 23 years in the program. Do you think I had it in my family? Anyway, he had 23 years, and he would talk to me about his alcoholism. Never mind. He'd always let me drink at his home, and he'd sit there very patiently sharing with me about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous without me realizing it. And so I'd listen to him, and he was just so wonderful. And this man, he would tell me, if it wasn't in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it didn't apply to his life, you know. And he went on, and it must have rubbed off, because he's what I thought about when I got on the plane that day to come home. But anyway, I attempted suicide during this period of time, thinking that nobody loved me. How self-righteous we become, you know, out there, and how stupid. Here it was on Halloween. It was 5 days before my youngest son's birthday. I thought nobody loved me. I had these small children who did love me, you know, unconditionally. Even two dogs who loved me unconditionally. Last night, I loved the thing about making a list of the people who love you. Gosh, I'm going to use that, because sometimes we forget there's lots of people. Even in our most desperate times, there's people that love us. Anyway, I did attempt suicide, and I'm very grateful that I didn't die. But I tell you one thing, I woke up in the hospital, and the doctor or whoever was over me, and I had two choices. One was to go home and do whatever, and the other was to go into a mental institute. And I looked at Richard, and I looked at that doctor, and I tell you which one I took. I took the mental institute. It took me 5 days to sober up. After I sobered up, I begged Richard to get me out of that place. And the wonderful part about that is, you Al-Anons, you always do, don't you? Anyway. anyway, he got me out, and I went into a year of controlled drinking, and it was the worst year of my entire life. I didn't smile. I didn't laugh. I was angry. I was hurt. I was full of self-pity, disgust. Yet the world had done me wrong, and it was just a matter of time till the big it got me, whatever it was. I was full of fear. I can remember a day real clear, and I hope I never forget this day because nothing has ever been this bad for me again. I was sitting in a hall. All our rooms came off into this hallway, and I was sitting. We had stairs going up to the upstairs, and I was sitting on those stairs, scared to death. The phone would ring or somebody'd come to the door or anything, and I didn't even know why. I was terrified somebody wanted me for something. Now, I hear people high bottom, low bottom. I don't know what kind I was, but I know this. I've been to hell, and when you've been there, you don't have to go any further. I was a member of PTA. I was on the board of directors, you know, for Little League Associations. I was active, but I was always drinking, and I always found the drinking people. We'd lock ourselves up in the press box at a football game, and we would drink all day long. One time, we got an official drunk, you know, and we just really... But I always found those people. They were there just for me, you know. But at the end, I didn't have anybody. I just didn't want anybody. It didn't matter. I didn't want to play anymore. I wanted to live, and I knew I was going to die. My mother, I got a phone call. My mother was dying, and I flew to Texas. And I spent 2-3 weeks, I'm not even sure how long. It was this time, 9 years ago, as a matter of fact, out there. And I didn't draw a sober or straight breath the whole time I was there. And how unfortunate for me, because I missed those last few weeks with her. But I remember her sharing, and I remember her trying to make amends to me at the end for what she'd done in her life to me. And I know today that she was sincere, and of course at that time I didn't believe her. But I'm so grateful that I've come into AA, so I understood a lot of the things about her, especially towards the end. I'd later went through her things and found some inventories, and I found some Dear God letters, and I have her big book, and I'm really grateful for that today. Anyway, the last day I was with her was September the 11th, 1976. And I got on a plane, and I ordered 2 double scotches. I'd been smoking, and I'd been taking a lot of pills because I stole all her pills out of her medicine cabinet. And I was taking pills, and I got on the plane, and they put me on early because I knew how to play with people's self-pity, you know. Oh, poor pitiful me and all this. And the stewardesses put me on and gave me 2 double scotches because I knew if you ordered one drink twice, that's all you could get from here to Atlanta, from Dallas to Atlanta. And so I knew to order 2 doubles, and that would get me from Dallas to Atlanta. And if it was a little longer flight, anyway, I got them. And I was sitting there, and I drank my first one, I think. I'm never really sure. But all of a sudden, and those of you who are alcoholic will understand this, and this is the most wonderful time of my life to this day, and I'm truly grateful, and I know that the hand of God reached in that plane and touched me. I truly believe that. I was sitting there, and it was like somebody put their arms around me and told me I'd be okay, that if I was to drink, I was going to die, but there was another choice, and I had to go to AA. Well, I'd like to tell y'all, it was wonderful. I stepped off the plane and we tiptoed right on through there, but it got worse. Lots worse. Anyway, I got off the plane and I got off and I says, Richard, I'm going to AA. And he says, oh, wonderful, here we go again. You know, because there'd been multiple promises. But I was real drunk. And I can remember the kids coming up to see me and hugging me. And Eric ran up and he was just a little guy. And he knocked me over backwards. And here I am in the middle of Atlanta Airport. You know, but I was ashamed, and I knew what was doing to me. You know, it is funny. I see people do that today, and I feel sorry for them. And here I was. I didn't want to be there. I wanted to be a good mother and wife. I truly, to the best of my ability, at that moment in my life, did love my family, but I didn't know what love was till you people got a hold of me and taught me. I'd never had it. I'd never given it. And today, it's just so neat to feel it all the way down. That was on a Saturday, and on Monday night, I went to my first AA meeting at the Lawrenceville Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, those are just about the neatest people I've ever met. Today, I'm a member of the Oak Road Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I think is the finest part of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. But and the people that are there are so special to me today. And it's because of them that I'm able to be here tonight. I mean, to this afternoon, whatever it is, time, doesn't matter. Okay, anyway. I came in and I had to do it my way because, see, I knew about it because I had members of family in AA So I knew how it was done. Now, mind you, I'd been to 3 or 4 meetings total in the 13 years my mother had been in the program, and sat there, probably had been drinking when I went to those, with not exactly an open mind. Nor did I have an exactly open mind when I came to the fellowship. That Monday night I walked in, and I don't remember a lot, but I do remember that it was a fun place to be and that I knew I was home, and that when I said my name is Lindsay, and I had to say Gabe because I thought I didn't care who knew I was there. I had to say my name is Lindsay Gabe and I'm an alcoholic, that I took the first step because I had fought it hard and long, and I knew about alcoholism enough to know that I had it. That when I said it, I admitted it, and it was okay. The rest of the steps, I have fought hook, line, and sinker all the way down the line. And I've only taken them or applied them to my life when the chips were down, I was over there in that corner and couldn't get out any other way. I wish that I had been willing and open-minded, but I wasn't. But I don't think that's a necessary requirement to be here. And I sometimes think that if you aren't, and that you're a fighter and a scrapper, sometimes that keeps you coming back because you're going to prove them wrong no matter what, you know? I was told to get a woman sponsor, but you know I got a man. And at lunch today, somebody said, I said, I got to run in and put on a dress. And they said, oh, why? And I'll tell you why, because Dwight M. was my first sponsor. We have to mention his name. It's necessary to him. And anyway, he was my sponsor, and he's a wonderful man. And he locked me in cars, and he was safe, you know. And he was just one of these neat people. And I came in, and I had on jeans and a T-shirt and sandals, and I was a hippie with a kerchief on my hair, you know, and all. And he can't believe it when I clean up today and put on a dress, you know, and have shoes and hose on. So I do it just for him because he's such a neat person. But anyway, I got a man sponsor, and I went to one meeting a week. They told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I went once a week because, y'all want, this is the good part. Because I was the mother of 3 children and had a husband who needed me at home. Now, wasn't I wonderful? I love it when a new woman comes in today and says that to me. You know, well, I've got to fix dinner tonight. It had been so long since I fixed dinner tonight. And if I'd only known by going to 90 meetings in 90 days, I didn't have to cook then, I'd have done it much sooner, you know. Anyway, and cooking is not my strong suit today either, folks. Sobriety doesn't change a lot of things. So anyway, I really did feel desperate at that point in my life. I really thought I was going crazy. I really drank because I thought I was going crazy, and I thought it was what was keeping me okay. So when I came in, the only step I heard, no, I heard two, was that came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That gave me my first rays of hope. The second thing I heard was made direct amends to such people, you know, about making amends. I can't even think I'm so hell. Anyway, and so I went home and I called all my family and made amends, you know, just went home and did that. Because our family, even though there was a lot of sobriety, that does not necessarily mean you have rational people dealing with one another, you know. So we had a lot of feuding going on. But by doing that, there was a level of peace brought into my family. So they say the steps are there to be worked in order. But sometimes if it works and you know it'll work, do it. Then work the steps in order, you know. Don't put it off. So I did that, and I grasped onto that. And then I heard the promises read in the meeting. And I was still going to one meeting a week on Monday night. And then the rest of the week was pure hell. And Richard and I, at 7 o'clock, we get in the kitchen and start that fighting, that same routine we had drinking, and I'd say, okay, I won't go to a meeting tonight, I'll stay home. Oh, wonderful person that I am, I'll be here. And I thought, aha, I can't go. And I didn't go, and we kept that up to one night. I got so mad and we got so crazy, and it was me, it was not him, it was me. I got so furious, then I had to go get drunk to show him. So I set out to go get drunk, and we were new to the area, and I got in my car and I sat out, and I didn't know where this Tuesday night meeting was because I didn't know where anything was out there except a direct route to my house. And I'd heard about this meeting at Sweetwater Chapel, not far from me, and I took off to go there. And when I got there, I found it. I mean, there it was. There was this white church, and I knew they were in there, and I walked in, and it was 20 minutes of 9. The meeting started at 8, and it ended at 9, no matter what. And I was in such pain, I walked in and I started crying and I said, I don't know what I got to do, but I want to feel better and I don't care. And those people loved me through the next hour. And some of them stayed with me till 1 o'clock in the morning that night. I believe at that point I started surrendering to you people and believing maybe your way works just a little bit better than mine. I then began going to 90 meetings in 90 days. I started going 2 and 3 meetings a day. You know, whatever it took, I was willing. I didn't even have a home life for a year. I just went to meetings. That's all I did. If it wasn't AA, I didn't do it. And I know a lot of times people get frustrated, especially people that are new to the program with their spouse leaving all the time. We were gone drinking, and there we are, gone sober. It's okay, because in time we come back, and there's responsibilities at home now that I meet that I never thought possible. I really do cook once a week, you know? Maybe. Maybe. But the first year was hard. It was, but it was wonderful, too. I, for the first time, saw the change of seasons out a window. I couldn't believe it. This meeting I went to had little trees all the way around it. And I remember looking out, and all of a sudden, son of a gun, there's flowers on those trees, you know. I hadn't even seen blackberry bushes. Oh, I saw them the first time. Y'all do have blackberries up here, I guess. Anyway, it was beautiful, you know. I don't know. I've never been up here before. And it's wonderful. I have to tell, it's wonderful. But I started experiencing feelings. I didn't know what they were. I'm real glad that it was at 9 months that I met my now sponsor, who's the most wonderful woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. Next month, I'll have my 9th birthday. And I met her when she had 9 years. And I wish I had a third of what she had then. But it makes me feel so good. I feel like I've grown up a little bit to be where she was. And now she's got twice as much sobriety as I've got. And it's a lot. And she's a gracious lady. And she's helped a lot of women in Alcoholics Anonymous. We didn't like women, she and I. I kept being told to call her. And I kept thinking, oh, I'll get around to it. But let me tell you what, when the chips were down and things got bad, I reached out and called her. And it was the most wonderful experience of my life. And because of her and my relationship, I today am more grateful for the women of Alcoholics Anonymous than any other gift I've been given. Because you see, I didn't like women, I didn't trust women. And today the women, and to be standing at an Al-Anon weekend is a fantastic thing, because I didn't trust you either. Obviously, you didn't trust us, you know. But we got here and we worked through it. It was because of an Al-Anon that I began to reach out. She came up and would hug me. And you know how you just get stiff and rigid and don't want to touch anybody. Don't touch me. And I'd do that. And she'd hug me. And one night she said, Lindsay, I'm going to hug you. Tell me you hug me back. And there came a time and I hugged her back. I was an unfeeling person. But deep down inside, I wanted to feel. I wanted to feel like you feel. I wanted to laugh and mean it. My sponsor said, tell us something funny, Lindsay, and nothing was funny. It was all tragedy. Today, nothing's tragic and everything's funny. You know, it's great. It's so neat to have. We were talking about, I heard somebody last night talk about this. It was Helen. She was so wonderful last night. I needed you so bad. And she got that sense of humor and the laughter. I've been given that here. And it was because on my first birthday, I have to mention Sheila now, this girl came into the program and all we did was laugh for 2 years. At times people want us to leave because she would laugh so much. And she's my friend and Al-Anon and her husband and I share the same sobriety date and it's great. I got in and I'd like to say it was an easy thing. My marriage went down the tubes. For 2 years, we had indifference in our home. The first year was kind of neat, you know, because we were sober and it was wonderful. And we were the couple. You know, have you heard this before? Y'all are the perfect couple, you know. You go back in your house and you kill each other. You're having the fight right up to the meeting. That's the good one. You're going in the door and then you walk in the door and say, hi, everybody. Isn't everything wonderful? Well, they'd stop believing it after a while. Some people would be in the parking lot, evidently, when we were having these little wonderful sessions. And then we reached the point that we couldn't even ride in the car to a meeting together. And that's the sad part to me. But it was necessary to get through sobriety because it was this point I had to begin to work in steps. My sponsor told me, I said, I'd call her with these Dear God letters, that's my inventories, and I'd call her, and I'd, Richard this, Richard that, Richard this, Richard that, and she one day, she said, Lindsay, do you love Richard? And I didn't really know, and she said, don't answer it now, but call me back when you know the answer to it. And I really thought about it, and I called her back, and I said, oh yeah, I do. Now what? And she told me, you get a black nightie, and you fake it till you get there, you know? Girls, it works. I tell you this, I never thought a marriage could be as wonderful as ours is today. I just never thought that, and y'all gave me that gift. You and the members of this fellowship gave me back my self-respect, and the next thing you gave me back was my husband. I always looked for something in the bottle. I don't know what it was I was looking for. I was looking for love. I guess that's what we all are looking for. I was alone and scared. But if I'd have only known, well, I don't know. It took all that to get me to know that it's just so wonderful over here to have the love and respect and the friendship of another human being. I think a lot of times we give up before we get there. I see it a lot of times in meetings. People, you know, they go through that hell. They get to the hell part, and it's bad. And it's bad in sobriety because people tell you, you're supposed to know better than that. Or, well, just pack your bags and leave. Or that's his problem. Or that's your problem. Those are weapons, folks. That ain't what it's about. What it's about is to just work on you, and in time, by working on me, I met him. What a neat gift, you know? We're also told to take the traditions and apply them to our marriage and see if it didn't work. I'm real glad that person talked to us because it did work. My message is family recovery. I'd like to tell you that I was the good side of the marriage all the time, you know, spiritual giant and everything else, but it just didn't happen that way. But I will tell you that it was worth waiting on and fighting for. You know, when we talk about making amends to your family, it's real difficult because I had said I'm sorry so many times, so emptily. The best form of amends for me was sobriety, and in time, this new person I became was the amends maybe that necessary. I'll never be able to make up for all those years he stood by me, but at least by being sober and together, we stand a chance. We had been hippies, as I kind of said, and we decided that we wouldn't pay taxes. And so we hadn't paid taxes, we hadn't filed taxes, we hadn't done anything. We were straight commission. By day, we lived in suburbia. By night, we were hippies, and on the weekends. So we decided to drop out, and we didn't pay taxes for 2 years, and Richard was a straight commission salesman. And one day, there was greetings and salutations at the front door. And we decided it was time to make some amends, you know? And so I didn't know what to do. I mean, we had no money in the bank. We, like everybody else, come in this program. We were so bad financially. We're not a lot better handling them today, except today I realize you've got to pay them to keep them, you know? And so I go charge like crazy, but I do pay, you know? I do realize that's what you do. And anyway, they came to the door. There we were. And I was scared to death, and I didn't know what to do, and this guy's at my door, and it plopped in my mind, well, just be honest. So I asked him in for coffee. I didn't know what else to do. He looked at me, and I'm not sure he knew what I was asking him in for, you know, for a minute. And he hesitated, and he came in, and he sat down in the kitchen, and I started telling him my life story. I didn't know what else to tell him. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I go to AA. I'm sorry. It's all the direct result of my drinking. And I just went, da-da-da-da-da. And he just shook his head, and I guess he believes me because he signed us up for a dollar down, a dollar a week the rest of your life, you know? So it was more than that. I got to calm down. I can feel myself losing it here. It was worse than that. And it was a hard few years. And we had to go to consumer credit counseling. And what happened here, though, was, see, I had said, I'd been hearing this HP. That's what I called my higher power at that time, because I couldn't say the word God because I didn't trust. It was that old guilt from my childhood days, you know. God will get you. And I figured I was going to hell and there was no way back. And I've said that a lot today. I'm sorry. Anyway, so we had to get down on our knees, you know, and it started bringing me to my knees, not totally. It took a little more to bring me to my knees. And anyway, we had to start paying back for our past financially, and I guess that was our shortest suit. We were bankrupt financially. We just messed up so bad. So we started paying back, and things kind of got bad, and it got to the point that we were going to lose our car. We were going to lose everything. You know, we'd gotten that bad. And we were on strike commission at this point, and it was a bad winter in Atlanta. Richard was in construction, or his work had to do with construction. So we were making like $50 a week, probably more than that. You know how we exaggerate. But anyway, I got through that time. But you know, what happened was Richard and I started talking about God, and we started believing. And people said, it'll be okay. My sponsor did give up one day. I never seen her. She scratched her head. She didn't have an answer. She kept saying, They've even given me a bumper sticker to put on my refrigerator that says, "This too shall pass." Because, you know, it'd be things like the car broke down. We'd call her. She said, "Be all right." And they never gave us money. I'm so grateful. They never gave us money. They never gave us solutions. They never gave us advice. They just said, "Be okay. Don't drink. Go to meetings. Come back and it'll be okay." And, so I would do those things. And I don't know why I believed them, but I did. And because there was no other choice, you know. So I'd say, I didn't have money. I didn't have any other choice. So, okay. And I didn't drink. And that was the name of the game there. So we called her up one day, and the car, one car had broken down, and the other car broke down. And then I called her up, and I says, "Okay, the lightning hit the two TVs, the dishwasher went out, and Richard's van just broke down in the driveway." And she said, "Oh." And she didn't know what to say. And I went, and she said, "But come on over." So I drove over, and the only other car, it was the reverse. My car broke down, and I drove over in Richard's van, and I got over there, and I pulled in the driveway. We were sitting in the house. I'm sure I was crying hysterically, as we do. And I didn't know what else to do, and they were patting me on the back, telling me to be okay, just don't drink, and sharing their experiences in their life. And we go out in the driveway, and there's oil all over the driveway, you know? And this car had gone, we thought, and it was just some minor thing. But they even looked a little troubled at that point, you know? But I went home, and Richard and I really did start talking a little bit about God. And we really began to realize that the only solution was coming to believe. And you do have to come to believe. And it is the only solution. And that through that experience, and things were bad for a little while, but the next day, I have to tell y'all, everything took dramatic changes. Everything. Now, we still had to be responsible because we're the people that messed up our finances. So for 5 years, we paid off those debts. And the neatest thing today is I got an American Express. I may not always be able to pay it, but that one's going to get paid because I've got one. I have arrived, I thought, you know, and I got that thing. But but it was, you know, it was like, because I haven't for a long time been able to go in a store and buy what I want. And I remember something else. If somebody's in that place right now, let me tell you, I know, and I'd go to shopping centers, and I have a girl I work with that's been there too, and I've seen her come through it. You walk down and you want something so bad, your heart aches. And I know we're not supposed to want material things, but you do. And I can remember walking back and thinking, okay, when God means for me to have that, I'll have it and truck on. And I'd do that 100 times, and inside I'd be aching. Well, today I have things I don't care, you know. It's not what's important. Being here with y'all feeling good, that's the name of the game. I don't want that stuff. I want y'all, and I want this feeling I have right now, and I am willing to go to any lengths to get it. I will fight tooth and nail. And I really have to go on about this past last year because it's the most important. It's the reason I'm up here today. It's the reason what's been going on. It's been the neatest thing. Now, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, almost 9 years. And for 8 years, I went along, and I really was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, chaired meetings, led discussions, did anything, made coffee, 12 steps, anything. You know, go out, pick up people, take them home. Not always willing. Kind of like when, if you've heard Clancy, you know, okay, I will. And then afterwards I say, aren't I wonderful? But I did it. You know, it doesn't matter. But what happened to me was I bought my own business. I went into my own business. The reason I had to go into my own business is I don't work well with other people. It's probably the reason. I'm back working with somebody else, and I'm already into a personality. You know, I've been there a month and a half. But anyway, what happened was, and we prayed about it, and we, you know, sometimes we think when we pray and we get this answer, it's the one we want, so God led us right into it. And I'm sure he did because he led me through a real neat thing. But I went into and I started my own needlework supplies business, and I love needlework. It's my passion. As a matter of fact, this afternoon I hear there's a needlework shop in town, and I might have to go check it out. But I opened one in a small room in a house, and for a year it rocked along. It was wonderful. It was just wonderful, and it still was the second year. But what started happening was, in the morning I was this president of my own company, you know, so I had to rush out the door. I didn't have the chance to come down on my knees, you know, so I'd meet God as I go, okay, God, let's go, you know, and I'd head out. And my meditations got faster, and I'd go out the door. Now, on a bad day, I'd go down to my knees because I needed help, you know. And the year got worse and worse, and I didn't have time for as many meetings. I try not to go under 3 a week because I really get off kilter, but I was down to 2, and then Eric got into wrestling, and some weeks I'd be down to 1, you know. And My meetings got crazy, but I thought because I was always talking to people in AA, and Richard and I always talked about AA, I was in the mainstream of AA. I read less and less of the Big Book and the 12 and 12, and I'm one of those people that's a believer in it. It works, and if you need an answer, you read until you find your answer. And I have this woman that I call in desperate times, and she's real hard. You got to be willing when you call her, and things must be bad. And I call her, and she'll ask me what step I'm on, which makes me a little angry. And she'll tell me to pick up the 12 and 12 until I read and find me. Well, I had to call her once during this first year, and I was hysterical, and she told me to read, and in the sixth step, I found self-righteous anger, and that was me. And it started getting, I believed again, you know. What happened was, the first year was wonderful. We did great, and then the next year was pretty bad. The second year, and the industry as a whole has been bad, and my business grew. My business, it grew. I also overbought. And it kind of got out of kilter. And what happened was we got in financial problems. We didn't. I did. And the strain of being back where I had been when I first came in took its toll on me. It was great. What happened was it brought me to my knees. What was really great was I learned. I used to sit in meetings on humility and didn't understand the word. Believe me, I learned it fast. And I was sitting in, and what happened was I started calling people again. I started going to a lot of meetings, 5 meetings a week, 6. I started picking up 12-step meetings. Step meetings, those are real important, y'all. If you're in trouble, go to a step meeting. I don't know if y'all have them up here. Start one. You go to where you start at the front of the book. Each week's on a step. Doesn't matter who comes in, you read it, and you discuss it. No personal philosophy. It's on the step. Okay, it was real important to me to do that. We had 2 real good ones in my area a week, one on Tuesday and Thursday. I started going to those. I changed home groups, and that was real difficult. But what had happened, I'm sitting in my home group, and I'm just, you know, flip, and, you know, I know, and people would say something, I'd say, oh, no, that's not how it's done. You know, I knew the answers. I knew the questions, I knew the answers, I knew the book, I knew everything. You know, I had it. I'm sober, 8 years, big deal. I was the loneliest person. I was telling Richard, we were walking across, and ooh, I just feel good. Y'all aren't strangers here. I went to a conference last year and was the loneliest person there. I know. Because I was so full of me, I didn't have time to meet you. And I missed, and even when I tried to meet you, I was hurting, and I'd tell you I was hurting, and everybody'd just say, it'll be okay. Keep coming back. What an answer. Works. What happened was I kept coming back because nobody would tell me what to do. Everybody'd say, this neat man that's come into our lives in the last year has 26 years of sobriety. John's just wonderful. He's just, I don't know what we would have done without him. But he goes to dinner. We'll go to dinner with him, or you'll call him. He'll meet you. No questions asked. Anytime, day or night, he's there for you. And Richard and I have been going to him because of all this, and he doesn't tell me anything. He just tells me I'll be all right. I'm doing fine. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Are you reading the book? I'm reading the book. You're going to meetings? I'm going to meetings. He says, you'll be fine. I could say, but I'm doing all this stuff, and nothing's happened. I've been sober 9 years. I know better. I don't know better. I may be sober 37 years. I won't know better. There'll be a new phase, new sobriety, new questions, new answers, I believe. I heard Jim Williams talk, and he says, now let me see if I can do it right, because this is how I think. He says, if you know, you don't know. And it's when you don't know that you know. And see, I know I don't know, so I know. And it made sense. I am almost through. But it is, phase 2 comes on next. I'm a little worried about that one. You never know where David's going either. But what started happening was I kept praying about the decision to close my shop, and my ego was in the way. And the pain was so bad, we didn't have Saturdays and Sundays. You see, I had done okay in the business. The business had not done real well. I had met wonderful people, made new friends. And I read in this book that I read in my meditation in the morning, it was a new twist on this. I'd heard a different twist on it all my life, but this made sense. It says, until you close one door, the other two won't open. And that was a little different from the way I'd heard it, because of what I'd always heard was when one door closes, two more open. That sounds okay, but this said, and so I thought, well, that could be true. And then this wonderful man in a meeting told Richard and I, The problem we get into is if we are praying and I'm turning over and he says, you make the decision and you go with it. What all cost, you go with it. And you'll be okay, because if it's the wrong one, you'll go the right way in the law if you believe. And so I was reading in the big book, and on page 504, I think it's in one of the stories in the third edition, y'all, because I was trying to read in the second edition and some of this stuff wasn't in my book. I bought a new book too, or Richard did, and I stole it. And what you do is, I had underlined all the points in the big book that I thought I needed to see. When I got a new book, I don't underline anything, and it's amazing what's written in that book. But it said, God, I've made a mess out of things, and I'll give you me, you know, and he fixed me. I began to see things in the book is what happened. So we made the decision to close the shop, and I knew I'd be okay. It didn't matter what. The pain was so bad, I couldn't take it anymore. I mean, I can stand here, I can just feel the tension, and I, you know, I didn't laugh a lot this last year like this. So if I'm up here and I'm silly, I'm sorry, because I've been up here and I've been so heavy. I talked one night and I couldn't do it. It was so bad for me. So I'm real grateful that I feel good, and I didn't realize I felt this good, though. But anyway, I was like, I can't believe I said that. But anyway, it said, I can't stop. I said, okay, we'll close it. Well, then the next day somebody said, oh, you don't need to close it. Lindsay, you need to wait out, feed the old ego, boy. And Lindsay just perked up and thought, no, I don't need to close it. I had a good day. Da-da-da. Lord, it got bad. It got so bad that one day on a Friday, up in the shop, I had to lock up. I was in an old house, and I had the hole upstairs. I had to lock it up. I was in there, and I was so scared I was going to get drunk or die. I didn't know what was going to happen. I was paralyzed, absolutely paralyzed. Like I was when I was drinking. It was as bad as it was when I was drinking. And I thought, I'm sober. Why is it this bad? I've been praying, I've been reading, I've been doing, I've been going, and I'm dying. And I called my sponsor, and she said, do you trust me? What simple words. And I said, yes, I do. It gives me chills to think about it. She said, don't drink, go to a meeting, you'll be all right. And I did, and I am. You know, I guess we think we're supposed to get more. I don't know, but I am. Isn't it wonderful? I'm sober. I didn't drink. I read, I did, I went, and I didn't drink. And that's what the name of the game is. So simple. I'm so stupid. I missed it. So anyway, I had another phase I forgot to tell you about, and I have to tell you about my children, because I never used to talk about my kids when I talked. I'm as proud as punch of these children, and I had nothing to do with it, and I realized that today. It was just, somebody told me that God loaned them to me. My Al-Anon friend, who knows a lot, that I used to think didn't know anything. And she, I don't mean the grumblings, because see, you people are just so neat that I can be here. My sponsor that lives in Macon, Georgia, she's the state chairperson of Al-Anon, just took me under her wing, and she doesn't let me get away with anything. Trust me when I tell you that. But she saw me a few weeks ago, and she said, I can't believe how you've calmed down. I can't believe how I've calmed down, you know. But anyway, my children are wonderful, and I have a son who's 20 years old, just turned 20. He's in the Air Force. And I thought he was going to be president of the United States one day. And this boy went off to college, and he lasted a semester, and he majored in Sigma Nu, and he found out about drinking and smoking. And I thought about that time he'd never learned about drinking and smoking. He'd always known it. And he and I couldn't live together. He'd come in the house, and I started crying because I didn't want alcoholism back in my house. And see, I assumed he was an alcoholic because he drank, right? But I didn't care. I didn't want alcohol back in my house. I went to the Al-Anon meetings, and I didn't get anything, you know, because I don't think I wanted what they had there is what my problem was. And I started talking to some Al-Anons one-on-one, and I kept going to more meetings, and it was during the same period all this other stuff was going on, and it was getting about as bad as it gets. And I just kept going, and I couldn't stand it, but I prayed for him every day. Somebody told me, you can't do anything, and I kept hearing the word detach, and I didn't understand detach. You know, I knew hate, and I knew anger, and I knew resentment, and I knew rage, but I did not know detach. I'm still not sure I understand that word. But I prayed for him, and I loved him. And somebody said to treat him with courtesy, and I really liked that last night. I wish I'd have heard that a little sooner, because I might have tried that. But he came home on leave, and I hadn't seen him in a while, and I had all these expectations, those that word again, and he came home, and it was bad. My expectations were he was going to get drunk, and I was going to know it, and boy, I was going to nail him when he did, and he did, and I did, and we did, and we fought, and it was terrible. And we wasted a week of rage in my house, and I felt so sorry for my other two kids, because, you know, the minute he got there, our whole household was that sick alcoholic household again. all those fears, eggshells, don't rock the boat. You know, my kids are going that way when I'd come this way. I don't blame them. So anyway, Jay went back, and I miss him a lot. And what happened was I kept praying, and I couldn't understand. I hurt for him. He had a cut over his eye, been in a fight, been arrested. You know, typical 19-year-old things, I guess. I don't know what typical is. Anyway, I got a phone call about him at the end of all this, y'all. I passed down page 449 in the big book of third edition again. I got to make that clear. And it talks about our expectations of others, and I'd like to read it because it's real important to me. And it says, acceptance is the answer to all my... Wait a minute. No, it's on page 452. And it says, acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. Wait a minute, y'all. I can't read because I'm so nervous. Anyway, okay. The higher my expectations of Max and other people are, the lower is my serenity. I can watch my serenity level rise when I discard my expectations, but then my rights try to move in, and they too can force my serenity level down. I have to discard my rights as well as my expectations by asking myself, how important is it really? How important is it compared to my serenity, my emotional sobriety? And when I place more value on my serenity and sobriety than on anything else, I can maintain them at a higher level, and at least for the time being. And so I thought, okay, and I'll read that. It was suggested I read that for 30 days, and it was suggested I read a lot of things for 30 days, probably from cover to cover. But anyway, I got a phone call about a month ago, and this child of mine called, and he called on his nickel, has not done that but once since he's been in the Air Force. And he talked for about 30 minutes, and I kept saying, Jay, you got to get off the phone, you're paying for this. And I could, instead of enjoying where I was at, of course, but I... I'm sorry. And I started talking, and he said, Mom, I'm doing the driving now. And I should have caught on, because I joke. When I go out with drinking friends, I do the driving, you know, because I don't get the DUI now, hopefully. And so he said, and I didn't catch it. And he said, Mom, I'm doing the driving now. I don't drink anymore. And I didn't know what to say, you know, because all my prayers were answered. I thought for a second, I didn't know what to say. I was real uncomfortable with the thing. And he says, you know, Mom, and he'd been stationed at Chanute in outside of Chicago, and he was now at Great Falls, Montana, and I knew if he went to Great Falls, his drinking was going to really be bad. And he couldn't even get his, you know, he's just been having a hard time. So he says, Mom, he said, I don't want to cry. He said, I don't drink anymore. He said, you know, I almost went to AA because I needed to make some friends. He said, but I don't drink anymore. He's got the answer. He may drink, but he's got the answer. And I thought, oh, okay. And I was free. And I'm not consumed with it. It's not ruling my life. You know, when we pray these prayers, they're answered when God's ready for them to be answered. They're not ready when I'm ready because I couldn't handle it. It's when God's ready that we do handle it. David's going to get up here and talk. And David and I, through the fellowship of Al-Anon, Al-Ateen, and AA, have established a wonderful relationship. We fight. It's okay. We get along. It's okay. It's a miracle sometimes. But I really am proud of this young man. He's moved on. And he'll tell you about the problem we came into one time, but it's okay too, because we know that it's okay in our lives. We have a communication, and you people gave it to us. And this young man over there that I embarrassed earlier is about as neat as they come. I will tell you, he placed third in the state in wrestling this year. That was a neat experience. We shared it. As a family, we were able to love each other and care. And David, he did real well in wrestling this year. And we cried and were able to love each other at the end. And you people have given it all to me. If I had to thank you for anything, I thank you for my self-respect. I thank you for my husband. And I thank you for the opportunity to be the mother to these three children. Because without you, without the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Al-Anon family groups, and Al-Ateen, I would not be alive, nor standing up here, nor be in West by God, Virginia, and I'm glad to be here, and thank you so much.
That was good.